evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Wednesday, April 3rd, 2024. A lawmaker in South Sudan says senior South Sudanese government officials should tell the nation where is Callisto Ladu Nyigilo, who was abducted by armed men on Saturday.
We are supposed to summon three ministers, the Minister of Interior, the Minister of Defense, and the Minister of National Security. But now the problem is, even if you are the Minister of Interior today, because he's not in charge of the whole police, the police is operating alone differently.
And South Sudan's hyperinflation hits the food industry.
The issue of the dollar rate has caused us a lot. We have reduced the amount of food we cooked because if we do like before, it will not finish. Customers are not there.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. A member of the National Legislative Assembly representing Lake State at the National Assembly says ministers of Interior and National Security should be summoned to answer questions about the abduction of Juba's former mayor, Callisto Ladu Nyigilo, by armed men on Saturday night. Joel Ngomangek Daniel says Callisto was picked because he was speaking and protecting the rights of his community.
If you are talking of election this time, and you are talking of election being free and fair, how can you talk of election and we still have this issue of threat where government officials who are even the members of the SPLM who are speaking publicly are being arrested?
Yeah, Honorable Daniel, let's get back to the issues of freedom of speech. I know that you have been very vocal speaking on behalf of your party about civic space. And today, the U.S. Embassy in South Sudan issued a statement that the abduction, or what you have just called now the arrest of the former mayor of Juba town, Callisto Ladu, is a clear example of lack of civic space. How would you react to that?
We cannot disagree with them. That is a fact. I'm able to speak because I'm like a public figure. My arrest may cause problem, and the party is standing with me. The current issue of former Juba City mayor being arrested because he was condemning land grabbing, which is against the right of property of the citizens of Central Equatoria, because it is not in line with our constitution that we should take property without going to court. But he was arrested because of coming out openly.
How do you know that he was arrested because he has been speaking on issues to do with land grabbing? I mean, I've heard him speak about illegal land grabbing in Gumbo, in Rajaf, in Jebel Ladu. But how do you know that he was arrested because of that?
Because now we have the evidence is this one. One, he was speaking openly, which many people have taken to be an incitement. And then second, we are not given charges to contradict what we believe to be the one. So as long as those who arrested him have not arranged him before court or have not brought him to court to produce charges against him officially, then we believe he was arrested because of what he said against those land grabbers, and we condemn them all. Like, IO does not stand to support such action. Even if we are in the government, we still condemn those government officials who are arresting this innocent South Sudanese citizen who is protecting the rights of his own people, because the government has failed to protect the rights of the people. So individual citizens who love this country must be ready to face all problems in protecting their own citizens.
And do you know where he is? Because his wife and his community and even the Catholic Church is concerned that his whereabouts are not known. They still don't know who exactly picked him. Do you know who picked him and where he's kept?
Until now, you will never know, because this is why we are saying there should be security arrangement in place. We don't know different type of security units operating in the country. Anytime you can be arrested. This is why he was arrested. Nobody knows up to now, even the family. The family does not know. The other opposition parties do not know. Everybody are not aware where he is taken to. And this is why we are demanding, because it's a matter of this country to be stable. So nobody is aware, and that is why people are sitting. If we are able to see him, we can go to court to make him released, because we can go to issue the writ of habeas corpus to make sure that is produced before court. And that is what the lawyers should do now, to compel this security agent or to compel the government to produce him.
I don't speak on behalf of lawyers, but it is a common sense that the lawyers would say this should be the job of a member of parliament to demand for accountability. And even summon the Minister of Interior and the Minister of National Security to answer, where is the former mayor?
We are supposed to summon three ministers, the Minister of Interior, the Minister of Defense, and the Minister of National Security. But now the problem is, even if you are the Minister of Interior today, because he's not in charge of the whole police, the police is operating alone differently. So these ministers are also innocent. We can push at them, but we need to account this as a whole, because there is a group of people who are operating independent of the government. That is why you have seen we are not able even to control the economy. The president is not even aware of these different security sectors. So the ministers are innocent. Unless we deal with IGP and the director of national security, these are the people who are exactly directly in charge of these people, and they can tell us, not even the ministers.
You sound like you are very helpless at this moment, not able to do anything, not able to find out where the former mayor has been kept. And this is coming from somebody who is a lawmaker. Is there hope for South Sudan?
I'm not helpless, as I said, because there is still in place, and we have made a commitment today in the parliament that we told the media openly that this time is a time of work. The Bill of National Security is still up to now. Up to now, it is still in the House because there are debates. We passed that bill in two stages, first reading and second reading, and we were able to scrub the powers of national security to arrest without warrant. But in the process, some members of the SPLM came in that they needed these powers because country will be lawlessness. Yet it is not the country which is lawlessness. It is the security which is not organized, which is lawlessness. And one of the ways of organizing security is to make sure that the security works in order. The police should take their own role and be respected and empowered. The national security should be the body that collects the information, analyzes it, and advises the relevant authority. Does not have power to arrest.
That's Joel Ngomongek. Daniel, a member of parliament representing Tribet County in the National Legislative Assembly, he spoke to me via telephone from Juba earlier today. South Sudan's transitional government of national unity recently announced the outcome of a long overdue investigation into the August 26, 2017 death of journalist Christopher Allen, a dual U.S. and U.K. citizen who was shot and killed while covering the conflict in South Sudan. The U.S. State Department issued a statement saying the report does not address in a comprehensive manner all the factors that led to Allen's death or the disrespectful treatment of his remains. The statement further renewed calls on the transitional government to conduct a credible investigation into Allen's death and to demonstrate the political will to take accountability seriously. Meanwhile, Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu says he will shut down the Qatar-based Al Jazeera News Network's operations in Israel under a new law that allows the closure of foreign networks deemed a threat to national security. Linda Gradstein reports for VOA from Jerusalem.
Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu wrote on X he intends to act immediately in accordance with the new law to close what he called the terrorist channel Al Jazeera in Israel. He said Al Jazeera acted against Israeli security, actively participated in the October 7th Hamas massacre, and incited violence against Israeli soldiers. Israel's parliament, the Knesset, passed the law with a 71-10 vote. Deputy Speaker Erez Maalul.
I announced that the bill to prevent foreign broadcasters from harming the state security, an interim order during the Operation Iron Swords until 2024, was accepted in the second and third readings and will be entered into the law book.
Al Jazeera condemned Netanyahu's incitement claim as a dangerous, ludicrous lie, and the network said it holds Netanyahu responsible for the safety of its staff and offices. The network, which has more than 430 million viewers worldwide, said it would continue what it described as its bold and professional coverage. Israeli media analysts say they believe the new law is justified. Gil Hoffman is the executive director of Honest Reporting, a media watchdog group.
People around the world don't realize that Al Jazeera is state media of Qatar and that it promotes a very hostile agenda to Israel. There have been many incorrect reports throughout the war, and they wanted to prevent further harm.
But Hoffman adds the ban's impact may be more symbolic for the Netanyahu government, which is facing vehement protests from both outside and inside Israel.
It has a 45-day limit, and while it can be renewed, it's only supposed to be used during war. And Israelis hope that the war will end soon. I expect this to be something that will be used once with great fanfare. Al Jazeera will continue to broadcast from here.
The U.S. administration weighed in. Karine Jean-Pierre is the White House press secretary.
A move like this is concerning. We believe in the freedom of the press. It is critical. It is critically important. And the United States supports the critically important work journalists around the world do. And so, and that includes those who are reporting in the conflict in Gaza.
The new law comes as Qatar is trying to broker a deal for the release of dozens of Israeli hostages in exchange for a temporary ceasefire. Some analysts said the new law could complicate those efforts. Linda Gradstein, VOA News, Jerusalem.
From Jerusalem, we move back to Juba, where some restaurant operators say they are suffering losses due to the country's economic situation. Yusuf Al-Sheikh, who works at a restaurant in Juba, says price fluctuations have caused a significant decline in the number of his regular customers. For VOA News, Manyang David Mayar reports from Juba.
Chef Emmanuel James is frying onions at one stop restaurant in Juba City. He says the food industry has suffered because fewer customers can afford to buy food.
The issue of the dollar rate has caused us a lot. We have reduced the amount of food we cooked because if we do like before, it will not finish. Customers are not there. Only a few people come, like three or four. We used to finish 15 cartons of chicken, but now we only use 3 cartons of chicken.
South Sudan economy has been hit by hyperinflation in recent weeks after the country cancelled crude oil sales for the months of February and March, forcing the local currency, the South Sudan pound, to depreciate against major foreign currencies. Yusuf El-Sheikh owns a restaurant in Juba town. He says his business continues to suffer due to inflation.
There is a great effect on us. Like, we sometimes fail to pay the workers because a lot of food remains. And we have reduced the amount of food, but still it remains. Sometimes we pour out food or give to street children who are outside here. And again, when we go to buy food items, we find that the price has increased.
Some South Sudanese who frequent restaurants say they are avoiding such expenses due to lack of money. William Deng says he's just eating bread for his lunch.
Two eggs with two shepherd. It is only it costs you 2,000 plus half of the cup of a seed is 1,000. which cost 3,000. I used to eat in the restaurant. Nowadays, the one plate can reach up to 5,000, which I cannot afford. And if I used to also, what about my family at home? So that's why I'm just changing to this Rolex.
Robert Kenyi, another Juba resident, says the country's economic hardships have forced him to survive on a cup of tea.
Things have become so expensive that I've really changed my mind not to go to the restaurants because it is very hard sometimes to get even 1,000 in a day. I just remain like this, not eat anything. I remain on empty stomach. Sometimes I can take tea, sometimes I don't even take any other thing.
South Sudan's finance minister, Awoh Daniel, promised that his office is working to address economic challenges facing the country. President Salva Kiir said in his Easter message that he has directed the economic cluster to adopt appropriate remedies to address inflation. For VOA News, I'm Anyang David Mayor in Juba.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from The Voice of America. Coming up, the effects of the conflict in Sudan has hit Western Bahr al-Ghazal state. Find out how after the break.
Hello, listener of South Sudan in Focus. We have an exciting new segment dubbed Words of Wisdom. We want to hear your thoughtful proverbs that echo through your community. This is another chance for you to share wisdom from your roots. All you need to do is record a proverb in a language of your choice, tell us its English translation and what it means. Keep it brief, authentic, and represent your community. Your recorded proverb shall be sampled on South Sudan in Focus every Wednesday. Send your recording via our WhatsApp number, +1 202 630 8011. That is +1 202 630 8011.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Our words of wisdom today comes from Jonglei State.
This is Peter Goch Anyang Majongdul in Jonglei State, South Sudan. I have a Dinka proverb that says, Makorba par wenukwet kipal kwang wanabas, meaning if you want to fly with eagles, stop swimming with duck, which is meaning that if you want to aim high, you stop lowering yourself.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. The International Committee of the Red Cross, or ICRC, says thousands of families forced to flee the conflict in Sudan have taken refuge in Bor Medina in South Sudan's Western Bahr al-Ghazal state. Most of those who arrive are in dire conditions, a major concern in an area where most resources and services are already limited. Nabil Biagio spoke to Daniel Bernskog, deputy head of the delegation of ICRC in South Sudan.
People have been arriving from Sudan already starting last July 2023. People started moving in to Western Bahr al-Ghazal. Based on our assessments and visits and, of course, our operation, we're talking about around 2,300 families, which is around 14,000 people that we identified that were amongst the most vulnerable. These people are both refugees, meaning people fleeing Sudan, but not originally from South Sudan, and returnees, meaning people who lived in Sudan but have ties and connections to South Sudan. They were originally from here. Most of them arrived with the clothes on their back, very few supplies, almost nothing, basically, which added to the vulnerability of this population in Bor Medina, where they settled, where actually they arrived in masses, meaning that they surpass the local population who currently lives there by 4 to 4.5 times.
So oh, you that's can imagine, quite remarkable.
It is a very large inflow of people that also put a lot of strain on the host population, knowing that it almost multiplied the total population by 4 to 4.5 times.
Something interesting that stood out to me was that there were people, South Sudanese, who fled violence in South Sudan some years back when the civil war was going on. They crossed the border into Sudan. Now they are being displaced again by the violence in Darfur and in Sudan at large. Exactly. They're being forced to cross back, you know, into South Sudan.
Yes, exactly. And actually, when we spoke to, I mean, we spoke to a lot of people in Bor Medina. We were there for, like I said, almost during a month. We were more or less permanently present, our teams. Some of the feedback we're getting from people who are returnees, many of the people we spoke to don't want to go back. They fear a return to Sudan, even if the situation would improve. Whereas the refugees, many of them have expressed, of course, a willingness to return home where they have their roots, their networks, and their homes. So we'll see what happens in the near future. What is certain is that there could, of course, be more people coming into that area.
You have these thousands of people coming into Bor Medina in Raja County, Western Barghazal State, where local resources are already strained and the area struggles with service provision. And these people, you say, they arrive with the clothes on their backs, so they need everything from food, water, shelter, healthcare. Tell me about that situation.
As I said, I mean, most people came with very little resources. Some came with literally the clothes on their back. Others came with the little items they could gather. But of course, it was not sufficient. And it's never sufficient, unfortunately, in these situations to maintain a dignified level of living. There has been, of course, coping mechanisms developed. People have found ways to at least have some food. I mean, in our initial assessments, people had less than 2 meals a day before our assistance. One of the elements of our response was to bring food for the households to last them for a while. When it comes to clothes and other items that are lacking, we also brought that. So we brought essential household items, clothes, blankets, buckets, basic things that you need to live a life in that area, to gather water, to have a change of clothes, and to be able to sleep correctly.
I'm glad you got into your response plan and strategies already. What are some of the limitations, some of the challenges you're facing when you're trying to provide a response to this humanitarian situation?
Now, there are a few challenges. The number one challenge is of course, the remoteness of this area and other areas where refugees and returnees have grouped together. Bor Medina is very far away. It takes a lot of resources from a humanitarian actor such as the ICRC to organize this, which means that during the time that we are supporting the vulnerable population in Bor Medina, we cannot use those resources for other activities. Second challenge is, of course, resources when it comes to funding. ICRC in South Sudan has drastically reduced its presence and set up in the country. Last year, we have reduced significantly our budget due to an overall crisis in humanitarian funding. This has made us become much more intentional in our choices, and we have to focus on the most urgent needs where we have an added value in the country as a whole.
That's Daniel Barnes-Cock, ICRC Deputy Head of Delegation in South Sudan. He spoke with my colleague Nabil Biagio from Juba earlier today. Still in Juba, some South Sudanese say it's important to have a conversation about an outfit that represents the country's people. This program asks people randomly what can be considered the national attire of South Sudan. For VOA News, Juliana Shapai has more from Juba.
Many people adopted the Sudanese traditional attire after South Sudan became independent in 2011. Many South Sudanese women still wear a top and some men wear jalabia, which is popular in Sudan. But South Sudan's 64 tribes have not agreed on a single traditional outfit that could be adopted as the country's national attire. Right after the country broke away from Sudan, some South Sudanese businessmen imported attires from Nigeria and Kenya. Some senior government officials have been seen wearing Nigerian outfits. Aluel Manyang is a fashion designer who says a blend of traditional attires in South Sudan will make a perfect match for the national outfit.
Recommend for the lawa. And the reason for that is pretty much because a lot of the people, so many communities wear lawa as their traditional. You have the Nera, you have the Dinka, you have the Bari. It's a lot of people that wear, you know, lawa. The different accessories, you know, the beads and whatever different meanings and all that. So to start with, I would say lawa, but then what to throw on it is, you know, subject to what can stand out or what you prefer, where you come from. But I think pretty much, you know, lawa would be able to do it at this, this particular time. I think lawa definitely.
Koriop Makwat says it's not going to be easy to pick one outfit to represent 64 tribes. He says the colors of the country's flag could qualify for the color scheme.
International and locally. So the attire that's supposed to be used is our national, is our flag for the country. So we can use it to design the clothes that's an attire presenting our country.
Another resident of Juba Town, Helen Hivita, is passionate about cultural attires. She says a blend of three traditional outfits could be perfect for South Sudan.
What I will suggest for a national attire, that's my personal opinion, I'll maybe incorporate the Shuluk one. People say it's a Shuluk attire, but so many tribes get to wear the lawa. It's not only the Shuluk. The Dinka wear, the Lotuko wear it, and I think even the Mundari wear it. And something else is the Tondura. I feel like so many tribes wear the Tondura. So maybe if I'm to incorporate a national attire, I would incorporate the lawa with the Tondura and a bit of a Lotuko suksuk.
David Uku is a promoter of culture and literature in South Sudan. He says South Sudanese need to reflect on their ancient times to design a national attire.
About our outfit in South Sudan, the one we should show our identity and our cultural identity, I think we need to understand our culture and our background that can help us to represent 64 tribes exactly. Because it's very important in a way that we can reflect our cultural democracy, that to bring all the 64 tribes together and to show how diversity we have in South Sudan.
Many South Sudanese wear different outfits from around the region and West Africa during traditional marriages and weddings. Government officials and some wealthy South Sudanese and heads of non-profits wear suits as formal dress for meetings and travels. For VOA News, I'm Juliana Sherpai in Juba.
That's all we prepared for you this Wednesday, April 3rd, 2024. When I leave you with Franco and the song Lokikiri.
In 1800, my grandpa told me that ye mari lo kajun lo kutuka ne bulo ye mari de. Pero kajuna kungiro la durunda dema monyero woto galadu noka lepe woti jika sinyiro na wayu boko kuyase kumonye longiro na amedangiro nonuna.
We've been listening to Franco and the song Lokikiri. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and engineer Rob Macklin, we wish you a lovely evening. Remember to join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Madev Niro Nikana, Odiri Lungira Lobo, Madev Niro Nikana, Odiri Nubadanabo, Lumire Dakatitani, Kumote Narukati, Nubadanabo, Kobo Lolonge.